compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. My number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Cyrus, I know that it's past the point now, but last month, did you send a happy birthing people day card to your birthing person? Do you even know what I'm talking about?
I think I might.
I'm trying to do a Joe Biden impersonation.
Oh. Okay, so birthing people.
Birthing people.
Birthing people.
Not mothers. Birthing people.
Come on, man.
What are we talking about?
You knew I have it down. I have it down. Okay, well, let me read this to you. It might make more sense. Okay, so this is part of President Biden's speech. He's referring to mothers and women, but this is part of his speech on a budget proposal. He says, the United States has the highest maternal mortality rate among developed nations, with an unacceptably high mortality rate for Black American, Indian, Alaska Native, and other women of color. To help end this high rate of maternal mortality and race-based disparities in outcomes among birthing people, and in addition to the blah, 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 birthing people, they can't even bring themselves to say mother. Thank you. You knew I was going to ask for the duct tape, didn't you?
That was for me.
Well, pass them over here. Birthing people. Thank you.
So what do I call dad?
Well, he's not a birthing people. I mean, you can't really say a birthing person because the word son is in the word person. So that's not a good word
to
use.
This hurts. I need some aspirin.
Birthing people. So happy birthing people day, I guess, now instead of Mother's Day. Now, I'm not just making fun. I guess I am kind of making fun, but it's worthy of being mocked. But this is an example of how far the rot has gotten, how far this has metastasized in our society, where even now the president of the United States himself is now fallen prey to this. Now, I realize that other people write these speeches for him. And that's true of presidents in general. You hire speech writers and they do a good job of making you look good and sound good in your speeches. But
you're supposed to.
Well, I mean, if you were el presidente, and your speechwriter handed you this and asked you, and you're supposed to say birthing people instead of mother, I would probably fire that person.
Yeah, we'd definitely be having a sit down.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not catering to this current fad.
Insanity. Mm-hmm. It's insanity on stilts. Anyway, I just wanted to bring it up because, you know, it just boggles my mind that we've reached this point now where people who should know better are falling prey to this.
I wonder what my birthing person-in-law would have to say about this.
That is a good question.
My grand birthing person.
You should call them. See, I can't say her. You should call them.
Them, yeah.
Yeah, call them.
Call they.
Call the zur. I'm losing track of all the different pronoun options. Call them and find out what they think about this. Your birthing person. Is your birthing person in law or your birthing person?
Ooh, I don't want that on my karmic record.
No, I really don't.
Yeah. That's exactly how I feel. I don't mind if it's on your karmic record.
I feel
I just don't want it on my karmic record.
I feel
record.
Like whoever wrote that is those two ladies.
They probably could have done that.
Yes, that's true, yeah. Ladies.
Yes, oh, that's my. True.
Yeah. The All right. Like the karmic record. All right. Well, Let's continue. Let's go to John in Phoenix. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Patrick. How are you today?
I am well, thank you.
Happy Taco Tuesday.
And to you. I hope it's a good day for you.
Y'all were talking about who's buried in Grant's tomb.
Uh-huh.
Yes. I believe the correct answer is no one is buried in Grant's tomb. Grant and his wife are both interred there, but their caskets are actually above ground, and you can view them through a glass. So the answer is no one's buried in Grant's tomb. Kind of a trick question.
Technically, yeah, you're right about that. Interesting. I did not know that. I've only seen pictures of it. I don't know that I've ever actually been to it. It's in New York City someplace, right? Someplace in Manhattan?
Yeah. Well, here's another challenging question for you while we're playing with those. Okay. Is the capital of Kentucky pronounced Louisville, Louisville, or Louisville?
Well, that's not the capital of Kentucky.
Oh, you got it. All right. You're hitting on all eight cylinders this morning.
Well, I like to read a lot. Just don't ask me what the capital is. But I know that trick question. So, well played, sir. Well played. Anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, and talking about your birthing persons, I used to be a judge, and I had a young
your phone's
female,
going crazy,
as she described
John.
Herself.
She was, John, I don't know what's going on, but it sounds like it's hard to hear you. Maybe call back and we'll get a better connection. But at the moment, I can't continue because I can't hear what you're saying. Thank you. And you got me. And yeah, I think you got Cyrus. Cyrus, would you have known the answer to that second question?
No. He would have got me.
All right. Let's go to Kelly in Minneapolis. Good morning, Kelly.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, my question is about how to speak with a long-lost relative that our branch of the family lost connection with. He's trying to organize a reunion with my great-grandma's half-sister and me at my request.
Okay.
But he did mention that he's Mormon, and he's wondering if we know about the LDS church and its genealogy resources. But I think he was kind of fishing to know whether we're interested in becoming LDS members. And I don't want to put him off because he's organizing this visit. And I want to, you know, tell him that I do respect a lot of members of the Mormon Church for their clean living and their dedication to God. But at the same time, I don't want to offend Jesus by, I don't want to offend Jesus either by talking up something that's not his own church. So what do I do?
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. Well, if it were me, Kelly, I would be Johnny on the spot. I would love to go to that event. Love it. And I would make sure I sat next to him because I would love to have a conversation with him about this issue. So if you do plan to go to it, I don't see why you wouldn't go. I mean, it would be fun and you could meet, kind of reacquaint yourself with that side of the family. My advice would be get spun up to speed by reading some of my articles on Mormonism and the distinctives between the Mormon Church and the Catholic Church on some pretty critical issues. Those articles are available for free if you go to relevantradio.com/Patrick and click on the link where it says links, and you'll find the articles there. There are about 36 of them, and you want to zero in on the ones on like the Great Apostasy and the Mormon Church's teaching on God and such. And there are maybe 4 or 5 articles to choose from there, but all of them are designed to help you know what to say in a conversation with this Mormon relative of yours. I think it will be very interesting for you and for him. And he'll probably be surprised that you know as much as you do, you know, that you are conversant. So that's what I would suggest. And it's free and it's easy to get a hold of. They're in PDF format. And then, gosh, I'd sure love it if you called me back and told me how it all went.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Do you think I should tell him that I respect the members of the Mormon Church a lot for those things, or do you think I should keep that mum about that?
If it's something you really feel, why not say it, you know? We want to be friendly to everybody. So if there's something good you can say that's helpful, we all like compliments, and when I hear people say, oh, you know, I really like those Catholics, they help people out, I mean, that makes me feel good. So if it's true, sure, I would say it.
Okay, great. All right. Thanks, Patrick.
You're welcome, Kelly. Thank you. 888-914-9149. I'm thinking back, Cyrus, to a family get-together in my family going back many years ago, and one of my cousins was raised Catholic, and he left, and he became a Mormon. And it didn't go so well because we were at this family reunion, and he and I were, like, grilling hot dogs for everybody else, and so we started talking about it, and you know, he wasn't trying to push it on me or anything like that, but I was asking him some pointed questions, and he didn't like it. He wasn't happy about that. And so we sort of agreed to change the topic. So if it's handled in a nice way, and maybe I was perhaps a bit more aggressive than I should have been. Have you ever been in a situation like that, Cyrus, where you want to talk to somebody about something, but it just doesn't, it's not received the way you intend it?
No, never.
Not even on this program.
All the time.
Yeah.
Every conversation I have with my wife. I'm kidding.
I like these true confessions moments.
Oh, you're getting it out of me today.
Anything else you want to divulge about your personal life?
No. It's frustrating when you are trying to, you know, help, and what you say just comes out wrong. And it's like, okay, so I'm going to have to backtrack and reassess how I'm approaching this topic with this person.
That's a good point. Yeah, we can go in with the best of intentions, but if we don't handle it in a tactful way, even with the best of intentions, things can be misunderstood or taken the wrong way. Well, I'm right there with you, Cyrus. I know what you mean. Let's go to Luke now in Menifee, California. Hi, Luke. How old are you?
8 years old.
8 years old. Awesome. Well, welcome. What would you like to talk about?
Who got the Ten Commandments?
Who got them? That would be Moses. He went up on the mountain.
It's because my teacher said I was wrong about Jesus. Moses went to a hill, mm-hmm. a mountain, and then Jesus was talking to him and gave him the Ten Commandments.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true.
Is that true?
It is true, yeah. You can read about that in the book of Exodus. If your family Bible is around, you can look that up in Exodus and see the story where Moses talked to God and received the Ten Commandments.
Okay.
What did your teacher tell you?
That I was wrong about that.
That's interesting. What is the, what did your teacher say was the right way to look at this?
Like somebody else got the Ten Commandments.
That's interesting. Well, I don't know why he would say that. I mean, if it's coming from the story that we read in the book of Exodus, I mean, it's clear that this was given to Moses, and you're right about that. So not sure what else to tell you, but on this particular point, you were right and your teacher wasn't.
Okay.
All right. Okay. By the way, I know the little town of Menifee very well. You are in an area where my parents moved to in the 1970s. And I don't know if you can imagine what it would be like there. But back in those days, there was nothing out there. There were no buildings. There were no grocery stores. There were no schools. There were no houses. There were virtually no roads. Newport Road was there, and that was about it. It was just empty hills and some people who had horse farms and things. And now, as you know, Menifee is super crowded, isn't it? A lot of people there now, right?
Yep.
Well, take it from me. It wasn't all that long ago, and that was just empty hills. And look at it now. Kind of like you. You're 8 years old now, but it won't be too much longer, and you're going to be all grown up. Thanks, Luke, and tell your mom or dad thank you for letting you call me. We'll go to Karen now, listening in Oakland, California. Good morning, Karen.
Hi. I'm calling because my child goes to a Catholic school, and she's in second grade. And they have a school assembly every morning. And for this week during the school assembly, they've had children, it's a video, they've had children with rainbow paint on their faces announcing to the kids in school that it is Pride Month. And I don't, since she's little, I can't really get from her if they expounded on that or what else they're talking about. But I don't think it's appropriate for a Catholic school to be promoting Pride Month. And also even
exactly
aside from that, pride is a deadly sin, aside from the whole, the other things that it represents in our society today. So I don't know, is there anything that you would recommend I do? Should I talk to the priest?
Yeah.
Or the bishop? Or
well,
like what?
See, yeah, so what I would recommend is start at the most local level and get in touch with the, I guess it'd be the principal of the school, and say, this is unacceptable. This is a Catholic school, and I don't pay, my husband and I don't pay tuition money so that you can indoctrinate my child with ideologies that are contrary to the teaching of the church. And I don't want you to do this anymore, or at the very least, I don't want my daughter to be part of that. I'm guessing you're probably not going to get anywhere. You'll probably even have a fight on your hands. Okay, then escalate it. Escalate it to the bishop and just say, you know, I, dear bishop, I realize you've got a million and one headaches already, but here's another one. And it's my headache because my child is going to this school and being indoctrinated with this ideology that, as we all know, is contrary to the teachings of the church, to glorify asexual perversion and to glorify sins against the sixth commandment is not part of Catholic teaching. Now, as I say, bishops already have enough alligators that they're trying to deal with, but this is an important one. And you as a parent have the right to request that this be stopped. Now, I'll go a step further, Karen. I don't know what your personal circumstances are, but if I were in your situation and my daughter was in a Catholic school that I was spending money, hard-earned money, to pay for her tuition, and this is the kind of education that my daughter was getting, I would pull her out of that school and either find an intact public school, if there even is one anymore. I don't know if that's even possible. But the third option would be to homeschool your child. And I don't know what your circumstances are, but I would encourage you to seriously consider that if the local Catholic school is not a viable option anymore, for the sake of your daughter.
Wow. Yeah. I've the reason she's in Catholic school is because I've gotten a good look at the public schools around here.
Yeah.
And the private school.
Oh, I know.
It's the same everywhere. It's really everywhere. And so,
well, here's the option. Here's your option. If you leave her there or leave her in some school like that, by the time she's probably what, in first grade right now, a very early grade,
second
grade. Okay.
Yeah.
By the time she's done with grammar school, you will have lost her. She will, I mean, she'll be your daughter. She'll live in your home, but she will be an ideologue. She will have been brainwashed with all of these aberrant and destructive ideas that are being pushed in the schools. And, you know, by the time she gets into middle school, certainly by high school, it'll be too late, I would think, to be able to deprogram her. It'll be so deeply ingrained. Which is one reason why we've got such a serious problem on our hands, is because this, you know, generations of children now have been cranked out of the school systems and their heads are filled with ideologies that it's nearly impossible to deprogram. It's possible, but it's very difficult. And I'd hate to see that in your case with your daughter.
Yeah, I think most of the families at the school are not really Catholic. They're just looking for a better curriculum and... Mm-hmm. So I'd probably be the only one making a fuss.
But then again, maybe not. I mean, I'm a big promoter of Catholic schools. I'm a beneficiary of having gone to Catholic school for quite a few years myself. So I'm very much in favor of Catholic schools. But let's face it, if the Catholic school is machine gunning the faith of the child, you know, woe to them. And I'm not going to spend my money to have my child in maybe the school with a good sports program or great academics. That's not going to get my child to heaven one way or the other. So if it's a school that is actually aggressively, proactively harming my child, I'm definitely not going to keep the child there. Personally, that's me.
Okay.
I feel like I've added a burden to your shoulders, and I apologize for that. But, you know, this is one of those things. It is so important, and there's no do-overs. There are no do-overs. And when your little girl is grown up, there's no more opportunity for you to fix this problem. Luckily, you're aware of it now when she's little, and there's still time for you to do something.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Hang in there, Karen. Hang in there.
Okay, you know? Thanks.
All right, thank you. God bless you. I know how hard it is. And you may say, how do you know how? Because I've been there and I've done this. We actually had to pull some kids out of a local Catholic school. It was perfect for us. This is back when Nancy and I were, you know, we had how many kids? We had maybe four children at that time. And our parish was two blocks away from our house. We could walk, and we did. We walked to church every Sunday as a family. And I'm sure all the neighbors who saw the Madrid family go by pushing baby strollers and moms out to hear pregnant with the baby on the way. I'm sure we were a spectacle for the people who saw us, but who cares? And the Catholic school that was connected to the church, our parish, was good in many respects. And I had to work a second job to make the money to pay for tuition. And we eventually took the kids out because, to give you a couple examples, one was they would have the kids go to Mass once, I think it was once a week, and then the religious sisters who were running it, they'd say, they don't need to go to Mass once a week. We'll just make it once a month. That was like the first red flag. Well, why? Why not once a week? It was working before. Why not do it now? They didn't really have a good answer for that. And then our kids were coming home and telling us, hey, Mom and Dad, they're telling us not to genuflect before we go into the pew. Because, you know, they were taught to genuflect. What do you mean don't genuflect? Yeah, they said it's disruptive. So it's like, so we had a conference with the principal and my wife and I, you know, we didn't know a whole lot, but we knew enough to know that this was deleterious to the kids. It wasn't enhancing anything, if anything. And so we found out more. We found out that they were teaching the kids things that were contrary to the faith. So we agonized for maybe half a second and said, okay, we're taking them out. And we took the kids out. We put them in a local public school. And that was a little easier on the family budget, but that only lasted for a year or so because like my oldest son, he would come home and he would say, hey, Mom, what does this word mean? Oh, well, wait till your father comes home. So then I'd come home and talk to him, and he would tell me the words that he was learning on the playground. And I would have to explain to him when he's, you know, 8 years old or however old he was, 8 or 9. And I didn't want to have to be in that position. And then there was, you know, fighting and bullying and the beginnings of other problems. So we agonized again over it. And then we decided, okay, well, we'll just homeschool. And my wife did that. So I understand when I'm giving advice like this, I understand that it can be a real jolt to your family situation or to your budget, but it can be done. And Nancy and I look back on it and say that those were the best decisions we made in that area. And we would do it all over again for the sake of our children. Do it for the children, right, Cyrus? I'll be right back right after this. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I like this too. What is this, Cyrus?
It's Taco Tuesday, my friend.
It sounds Italian to me. Lasagna Tuesday, maybe. I kind of like it.
Ah, this is good. This is speaking. It I want like some enchiladas, some
enchilada.
Quesadillas.
There's an A at the end. Enchilada. Okay, enchilada. Back to it. Let's go to Nick in Salt Lake City. Good morning, Nick.
Hey, good morning, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
So I'm 20 years old. I just got a job in the finance industry. I've just been like working toward getting there and finally made it. I tried to pick like a firm that is like a little more on the conservative side, but once I got in, realized or found out that they're like Planned Parenthood is one of their like biggest contributors and stuff. I guess I'm like, so that's like the specific scenario, but like in the general sense, is it like a sin, I guess, to work for a company that does like donate to Planned Parenthood if my job has nothing to do with that?
Yeah. So let's mm-hmm. It makes complete sense. Yeah. And it's good that you're having these qualms because it shows that your conscience is functioning, which is good. So Is this a, you don't have to tell me all the specifics, but I mean, is this like a large company where you do a job that is, you know, you're pushing paper or you're making something or you're in some other department and what you do is just mundane? Is it a job like that? Or are you in the department that writes the checks as donations to Planned Parenthood or something more direct?
So it's completely indirect of it. It's like just customer service, like people call in and I just help them.
Okay. Okay. So yeah. Your participation with what your company is doing is remote and it's unintentional. You don't intend to have any connection to their connection to abortion and you yourself are not doing anything that would be morally compromising. So from a strict standpoint, I would say you're certainly not committing a sin by working at this company any more than you would be if you were a flight attendant with American Airlines, which, you know, does things like that. Or if you were a barista at Starbucks, or if you worked for a large car manufacturing company, or you worked for Visa, or, you know, there are hundreds of major companies that in some way or another make donations directly or indirectly to big abortion. And if you have a job in one of those companies, you're not doing anything sinful because you're not participating. If you worked for a hospital and your job was to be an emergency room, or not an emergency room, but let's say an OBGYN nurse helping to perform an abortion, yeah, that obviously is directly compromising and you couldn't do that. But in this case, it doesn't sound like you're anywhere near that. So my thinking would be if you want to be completely free of it, then start looking for a career in a company that doesn't have those ties to big abortion. And in the meantime, you know, do the best you can. And then when you have an opportunity to switch to a better place, then that's what I would do.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a fun position to be in. But unfortunately, nowadays, just about any company you do business with or buy a product from or a service or something, in some way or another, you're participating because so many companies now are entangled with big abortion in the form of donations. I mean, for that matter, as a U.S. citizen, you pay taxes. Well, you're participating in abortion because under the current administration, this wasn't true in the previous administration, but it flip-flops back and forth. Whenever a Democrat gets into office, the spigots open and money starts flowing to big abortion. And when a Republican gets into office, it seems that the spigots are closed. But even still, our tax money is still being used for things like that, regardless of who's in office. And we can't change it. So we're stuck in a situation where even just being an American citizen, a privilege that I'm glad that I have, even that has us entangled in some remote way with abortion. And there's nothing you can do about it. So do the best you can, Nick. And I hope you're successful in finding an even better job at a company that doesn't do that kind of thing. Let's go next to Matt in Beaver Dam, Wisconsin. I hope I have that right. Welcome, Matt.
That's correct. Can you hear me all right? I have to use speakerphone, otherwise you can. Okay.
I can.
You can't?
I can hear you, Matt, loud and clear.
Okay, got it. Okay. Some years ago, when I visited Salt Lake City, I took a tour, and on the tour, got into a conversation with a group of Mormons, and I wanted to find out their basic theology?
Beliefs?
Mm-hmm. Anyway, their statement was, is man now is God once was. And I said, oh, how can he become God? How did he become God? They said, through righteous acts. And I said, well, who determined what was righteous if there was no God before? And they were stumped. Mm-hmm. And also I said, you must have an evolutionary God. And they didn't like that at all. But
you know what, though?
I just wanted to...
Mm-hmm. Let me share something with you. First thing is that aphorism, as man now is, God once was, that is actually part of their belief system of what's known as eternal progression. They believe that human beings can progress to become gods. And I won't I won't bore you with all the specifics, but that's a big part of it. Now, that aphorism, theologically incorrect, but it's patterned, I guess, after what St. Athanasius said. He said, "For the Son of God became man so that we might become God." And he didn't mean that in the way that the Mormons mean it. He means that we would be divinized. It's a process in the Catholic Church known as theosis, where those communicable attributes God can share with us, he does share with us, so that in heaven we become like God. We don't become gods by nature. That'd be impossible. We remain creatures and we remain human, but we take on those communicable attributes of God. That's the Catholic teaching, always has been. Mormons believe that you actually become a god, and this is a very good question that you ask them, because in fact, the founder of the Mormon Church, Joseph Smith, he preached a sermon known as the King Follett Discourse. King Follett was a Mormon, a member of the Mormon Church, who died, and so he preached at his funeral, and you should look this up. The King Follett Discourse, it's not considered part of their inspired scriptures, but I mean, hey, Joseph Smith propounded this as part of the Mormon Church's doctrine. And in it, he specifically says God is an evolving being. God evolves. He evolved from being a man on a planet near the star Kolob, and he evolved into a god. And Joseph Smith went further. He says that for every Mormon who becomes a god himself, God, our God, God the Father, Heavenly Father, he rises higher. He takes on more glory. He gets, a bigger, he's our diamond direct, so to speak. And if you really want a very clear explanation of this belief system, I would read the King Follett Discourse. And I have a feeling your jaw will hang down, because it is very blatant. Anyway, food for thought, Matt.
Okay, yes. Well, that explains a lot more than I knew, that I found out.
Yeah. Well, happy to be of service.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Matt. I appreciate it. Thank you. 888-914-9149. How about Jackie now in Glendale, Illinois? We'll go from Green Bay to Glendale. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Patrick. Just calling because I wanted to share about the schooling. I'm a teacher and also a parent of two children. They have been both in the public system and also in the Catholic system. I believe that the children, should come to the parent for the tough questions. Mm-hmm. I think that, anything that, anything. I think when the child comes asking about sexual orientation or bullying or, I think it's important for the child to go to the parent. I think when my children are coming to me, I feel so proud that they trust me so much to come to me. It's embarrassing.
What about, though, and I'm with you, I agree with you, but what about the parents who may or may not realize that the school is not even asking their permission? They're just indoctrinating the kids with these topics from some of the earliest grades, first, second grade, and the kids are being taught this stuff, and the parents may not even know about that. I think that's probably a very common scenario.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be, that the schools are supposed to be, the parents really should be doing the research, getting in the website and looking at the curriculums. All the schools should have posted on the website curriculum information. It's by law of the state that the schools have it on the website. The state has the law by law. In fact, the private schools don't have that law.
Let me interrupt you, because I don't disagree with your premise. The only problem is that's not the real world. And many parents, they're busy, they're tired, they're already stretched in a million different directions. And some of them just don't bother with that kind of thing. So I agree, in theory at least, parents should be doing that. But how many actually do?
Right.
This is one of the reasons why it's so insidious, the way academia has been overrun with these ideologies. And now the children are being warped from a very early age, and by the time they graduate, they're effectively brainwashed.
Right. You know, my children, you know, they're 15 and 12. And, you know, they ask me about transgender and, you know, everything. And I do feel I want to talk to them about this. I want them to know from me. And I tell them, nothing that you ask me is going to make me upset. In fact, if you don't, is what's going to make me upset.
Right. Well, you're a good mom, and I want to give everyone the benefit of the doubt, obviously. You're a good mom, but there are a lot of people who just don't have that level of oversight with their kids. They just don't. Maybe they're not even aware that they need to have that oversight. But for whatever reason, I'm glad to know that you're doing it the right way, Jackie. Thank you. Appreciate your phone call. 888-914-9149. Perfect time for a break. We'll do that now and come right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Real life solutions you can believe in. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. And yes, happy Taco Tuesday. I have an email that came in from Anne, who says, I love your current remarks regarding pride being promoted in a Catholic school for the caller's second grader. This is so outrageous. This is ill-thinking that it is being promoted in a Catholic school. Yes, she must push this issue. The bishops need to know, and shame on the school's principal for putting this on their students. Well, thank you for writing to me, Anne. I appreciate that. 888-914-9149 is the number to call, and we still have some time to get you in. Let's go to Nino in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Hi, Nino. Welcome.
Hi. Good morning, Stu. I had a question relating to why the church has not taken a stand yet between creation and evolution, and because there's a lot of science that proves on the creationist side. So I'm just curious why the church hasn't taken a stab on this, or if there is one.
Well, the church is will be the first one to tell you that we pay close attention to what God has revealed to us in Scripture, and we look at Scripture and accept it as God's revelation to us. But in the case of the creation account in Genesis, the church also recognizes that that's not intended to be understood in a strictly literal sense or as if it were a scientific or historical treatise describing to us how things happened, rather that things happened. So the church says we must believe, for example, in Adam and Eve is directly created by God. The church rejects the atheistic notion that evolution just sort of by chance arrived at human beings. The church doesn't hold that view, obviously. But at the same time, the church recognizes that science is man's response to the natural order and how God reveals himself, you might say, in the book of creation. So the church is not only open to science, but it encourages scientific inquiry in finding out what exactly we can know about the material universe. So the scientific evidence strongly points to the fact that this Earth that we're on has been here for a very much longer time than, say, 6,000 years, as creationists often hold. And various natural processes like the Grand Canyon and other things that we can point to and say these processes took far longer, far, far longer to take place than what could be possible in a span of maybe, say, 6,000 years. So the reason the church doesn't, quote unquote, take a stand on this issue any more than the church already has is because the more things go, the more science informs us about the reality of the material universe. And the church is open to that and accepts that. And obviously the church will not accept something that's contrary to divine revelation. But the explanation for the age of the earth and how earth came into existence, all of it was by God, of course. God created everything either directly or indirectly. But it's compatible with science, and the church's view of creation is compatible with science and has nothing to fear from scientific inquiry. So not being a scientist myself, I can tell you that that's my understanding of the church's posture toward this issue. I gather it's probably not yours, but I hope that I've accurately reflected the church's approach to this question. What do you think,
Nino? Thank you. I think there's some science that would support the creationist theory and the timelines on how they take the recordings for the years that is taken into account, because there are errors in carbon dating and how they are performed, mm-hmm. not because the carbon dating in itself is inaccurate, but it's because of how it's taken. But that's on another subject. But okay. I do appreciate very much your answer on how the church approaches this. So it does make a little more clear.
Thank you. I recognize that not everybody holds that view. Some people, they do hold the creation account in Genesis to be a literal explanation of things. I personally don't. But one thing is for sure is that the church gives us freedom, gives us latitude to hold one view or the other, or maybe something in between. Thank you, Nino. We'll go now to Pamela in Boston. Good morning, Pamela.
Good morning. My question this morning is, where can parents get information about talking to children, 5 and 6 year old, about this trans gender generation mm-hmm. that's coming out? Recently, her neighbor said her 12-year-old daughter has come out and she's bi-gender, and my daughter hasn't talked to her children about it because she doesn't really know how to approach it. And then we went to a wedding this weekend, and we found out the 10-year-old they were speaking with said she was a girl, but she magically became in a boy's body. And the mm-hmm. children were saying this, and they believed it to be true, you know, the 5 and 6 year olds, because the girl said it.
Yes. Well, a good resource, a good place to start is a book called When Harry Became Sally by Ryan Anderson. So it's the subtitle is A Response to the Gender Moment. So that would be, or the transgender moment. So that would be the book that I would recommend that the parents would read and assimilate the information, and then in an age-appropriate way, filter that to the children so at least they'll understand it. It is, unfortunately, something that the kids are being exposed to at very early ages. So although you'd rather not have to talk to them about a topic like this, this is where we're at. So parents have to emphasize to the children, listen, you're going to meet people out there who claim that a boy can become a girl or a girl can become a boy. That's not true. It's not true scientifically. It's just not true. It's a belief system that some people have, and you're going to meet them, and they're going to tell you that this is true, but it's not true, and you need to know that it's not true. So you can start there, even just at the standpoint of science, and recognize and tell them you're going to get people who might even get really angry with you. And they might call you names, and they might threaten you. But you have to know what's true, even if maybe you're the only kid in your classroom who knows what's true and is willing to stand up for it. You need to be able to do that. So to kind of prep them to understand that they're going to face a lot of resistance and maybe even being attacked, at least verbally, for believing in what is true. But if the parents aren't teaching them this, you know, then when the kids get into school, they'll be flattened by the ideology very quickly. And after enough time goes by, it'll be hard to retrieve them. So there you have it, Laura. I'm sorry. I think we had a problem with our phone line there. I hope that's helpful. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to, where are we going? Let's go to Laura. There we go. Laura in the Bay Area. Good morning.
Good morning, Patrick.
Yes.
Yes. Hi. I want to thank you for everything you do, and I appreciate you imparting your knowledge to us and also your compassion each and every time with every caller.
Thank you, Laura.
I often have arguments with non-believers, and I remember one particular one where I was talking about how compelling the early church martyrs are to me, and the fact that they were willing to die very violent deaths for this, you know, this man who had said things that were really blasphemous at the time. And the person countered, well, you know, Islamic terrorists are ready to die for their faith. That proves nothing. You can just be so crazy that you're ready to die for anything. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could help me with some arguments with that.
That's a good comeback on that person's part, but there's an even better comeback that you can use. for that one. You could say, well, the difference here is we would argue that the Islamic terrorists are brainwashed. They have bought into this idea that by perpetrating these violent acts that they're somehow pleasing God. That's different from what we're talking about here with the early Christian martyrs. And let's go all the way to the very beginning. What I would recommend you do, Laura, is to say, here's the difference. The apostles, let's start with them. They were all martyrs, but except for Judas, he committed suicide, and St. John suffered the pains of martyrdom, the tortures of martyrdom, although none of them actually killed him, but all of the rest of the apostles all died as martyrs, a very cruel and, as you say, violent deaths. So nobody wants to die that way. Nobody seeks that type of horrible end to one's life, not to mention all the trouble that they went through up to that point, being hunted like criminals, being stoned to death, or being stoned by the Jews, for example, being flogged, put in prison, just all kinds of things that they had to go through. And for what? Because they saw Jesus resurrected. They knew him before the resurrection. They saw, in the case of St. John, they saw him die. They knew he died. And they saw him rise from the dead, as he said that he would. Now, that is something that we have to take into account. That is data that has to be reckoned with. Why would they do that if that wasn't true? If Jesus didn't really rise from the dead, who on earth would be willing to die a grisly, painful death for something that you know is not true? And what do you get for your trouble? They didn't have concubines. They didn't have money. They didn't have prestige and power and nice homes and all the things that people might try to scam people to get. They didn't get any of those things. What was in it for them? Why would they be willing to die a painful death for something that they knew wasn't true? It's inexplicable, aside from the one possibility, and that is that Jesus really did rise from the dead. And it wasn't just the apostles. It was also hundreds, if not thousands, of other people. We're told that at one time after the resurrection, Jesus appeared to 500 people, 500 of his followers at one time. So these people too were willing to die rather than renounce Christ, rather than recant what they were saying publicly, and that was that Jesus had risen from the dead. So maybe you could find one person who's delusional who might be willing to die for something that isn't true, but can you honestly say that that you could find hundreds or thousands even of people who would be willing to die for something that they knew wasn't true? No. The answer to that is no. It's impossible. That's the key difference, is that these early Christian martyrs, they were dying for something that they believed because they had evidence to support it. Now, once you get past that first generation, the next generation and the generation of that, they didn't see Jesus. They didn't know him personally. They didn't see him during his time after the resurrection. But the fact that you have this force of believers who did see Jesus, who were willing to die for this, it carried immense weight with those who came later. And they recognized, just as we can today, nearly 2,000 years later, that the truth of this story is it's inexplicable any other way. There's no way to account for it any other way other than that Jesus is who he claimed to be. Now, there's much more that one can say, but I would look at this question from the person that challenged you from that standpoint, and I would bring it back to Jesus and say he is the reason why people are willing to die if necessary. We don't seek it, but if necessary, we will die a martyr's death for him because it's true, and we have the evidence to go on. And this is wildly different from the brainwashing that goes on with somebody like an Islamic terrorist. Jesus never told his followers to go blow up buildings and airplanes and kill people and cut off their heads. So it's not even fair to equate Christian martyrs with the insanity of Muslim terrorism. That'd be another thing I would bring up.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Laura. A good book for you. It's called Handbook of Catholic Apologetics, co-authored by Dr. Peter Kraft and Father Ron Ticelli. It's published by Ignatius Press. And the first 30% of the book deals with this issue and similar issues. I think you'll find that very helpful. Thank you. Let's go now to Deacon Tony in Lombard, Illinois. Hello, Deacon Tony.
Hello, Patrick.
Thank you for your program.
Sure.
I really love listening to it. I wanted to follow up on your conversation about the biblical theory of creation versus mm-hmm. the scientific theory of creation, and whether or not it could be sort of a false dichotomy between the two. I wanted to know if you are, because you had spoken about the compatibility between the two, are you familiar with the work of Gerald Schroeder, who is a physicist, mm-hmm. I think out of Princeton, and also a Jewish scholar of Jewish scripture, and he has found a connection. This goes back some 20 years, I think. Did the math, did the scientific work, did the math, and has put forward not so much a theory, but support that actually that science supports the biblical view. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
If you take into account Einstein's theory of relativity and the expanding universe.
I apologize. Oh, what a fascinating topic, and we ran out of time. How about this, Deacon Tony? Call me back, and we'll dig into it further. I appreciate that. Until tomorrow, please pray for me, and I'll pray for you.